Welcome back to Ed Says here on the Talk of Connecticut. Joining us now is political analyst and executive director of the National Immigration Forum, Ali Nourani, to talk about the DeVos confirmation. Good morning, Ali. How are you?
Hey, good morning. How are you doing?
Doing all right. So, it was a close one, an historical one, a 51-50 vote when it comes to Betsy DeVos and her confirmation. What can you argue for the side of why she should have been confirmed?
Well, I mean, the question here is the, you know, what do we do with the level of partisanship that has taken over the Senate? I think that 50-50 divide is indicative of where we are as a country and just this massive level of energy that's coming from citizens across the U.S. And for two Republican senators to step away from their administration's nominee, I thought was pretty, you know, it was something to follow pretty closely as we move forward through the nomination process.
I actually had a caller right before the break and right before you came on ask me, essentially they didn't know much about her, but asked what failings or what kept her, what made her different from previous nominees, and I said that the fact that she has no educational background or experience or degrees, that she never attended public school and doesn't have any children that attended it. Was there anything that was on the plus side? Because for me, those are all negatives.
You know, to be honest with you, I'm not sure if there was anything on the plus side. She was certainly close to the Trump campaign, you know, throughout the course of the election. And the other piece of this is that, you know, the public education system today is very different from the public education system of her generation. I mean, and whether it's in, you're in Connecticut or North Carolina, the student population is much more diverse. The needs are much more diverse. And therefore, the opportunities and types of policies that come from the federal government need to represent and serve that diversity.
And what are some of the dangers that I tried to explain, in my opinion, what some of the dangers of putting it on the state level and basically what comes to the privatization of our school systems. And I equated it to those with money being able to shop at the more expensive stores while the rest of us will be shopping at the Walmarts and Target, except for education-wise, which means those of us with less money won't have the same opportunities.
I mean, at the end of the day, we as a country, we want to make sure that all of our children have access to a quality education. And that means that quality public education across the board needs to be provided. Yes, at some level, states and localities need to have control over education, but the federal government needs to be setting standards because, you know, our kids are our future, as trite as that may sound. You know, our future competitiveness at whether it's Connecticut or North Carolina or at a national level, depends on the, what kids in our schools, in our public schools today learn. And if she sets up a system where different kids have different access to quality education, that's a long-term loss for us.
And you touched on it, this partisanship with two Republicans switching sides. What kept the rest of them, the others, on the other side? What kept them voting for DeVos? And there is the implication that perhaps it was campaign contributions, but what else? Just sheer partisanship?
I think so. I mean, I think unfortunately we are, you know, a lot of Republicans and even Democrats are putting politics ahead of country, or party ahead of country. And that is a very slippery slope for us to head down. How are we going to solve big problems like, you know, the immigration system, poverty issues, climate? I mean, those issues require a level of bipartisanship that leadership, whether it's in the White House, the Senate, or the House, needs to get back to.
And one of the things I mentioned was that we saw last night in the Sessions hearings, we saw Elizabeth Warren silenced by them invoking some old law or rule that doesn't really apply considering they insult each other every day. But I warned to those supporters of the GOP that change the rules now, they benefit you. But the pendulum does swing, and it could be in the Democrats' favor in a few years, and then they'll be crying foul. Where does it end, or are we just going to continue to be partisan and play to smaller and smaller segments of the population?
I think what the future needs to hold is, when you look at the polling, when I talk to people across the country, folks want solutions. They want both parties to work together towards pragmatic, practical solutions across a range of issues. And I think that what we're going to see, unfortunately, is just a growing level of resentment and frustration from Democrats and Republicans, and it's going to take a transformational type of leadership that says, okay, there is a better way. And I strongly believe that, you know, the majority of Americans want these types of bipartisan solutions, and, you know, it doesn't matter who you vote for, you just want them to get the job done. And, you know, at this juncture in new administrations, it's never pretty, and this certainly is not very pretty.
We're talking with Ali Noorani, who is a political analyst and executive director of the National Immigration Forum. I imagine with DeVos's confirmation, that was the one in the most danger. I assume that Sessions, you think Sessions is going to get the confirmation as well, regardless of what the Democrats are doing, which is purely symbolic at this point.
Yeah, I think we're going to see Senator Sessions confirmed as Attorney General later this week. Puzder, who was nominated for as Labor Secretary, has seemed to run into some issues over the last 24 hours in terms of past hiring of an undocumented worker for to work at his home. So it seems like Puzder may be on shaky ground, but the rest of the nominees seem to be moving forward, especially since, you know, the Democrats, get back what you were saying earlier, they eliminated the filibuster on confirmations, and now this is coming back to get them.
Well, thank you for your time, Ali. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
Hey, thank you very much for having
me. Have a great day. 888-574-2723, the number into the studio. He did mention Puzder, the other one, among other things. The idea that he'd be in charge of labor is troubling. But when you talk about Betsy DeVos, and I have my perspective, but I decided to grab a couple other perspectives. Michael Goodwin is an opinion writer for the New York Post, writes, the Democratic Party has lost its mind and its soul. As he writes that all state Democrats rejected DeVos, marked a new low for the flailing party. Those are his words. This is the writer, Michael Goodwin. Again, partisan hackery at its best by this writer, because there has not been a candidate more demonstrably unfit for the position than DeVos. DeVos was unable to have a discussion about proficiency versus growth among students in education, which is essentially the first question you get asked when interviewing in education. It is a long-running debate. There are those that say growth is better because it accounts for individual progress, and there are those that say proficiency should be it and have a common level of it. But she also didn't know about the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, and then said we should have guns in schools because bears. But Michael Goodwin says this is on the Democratic Party, because these are supposed to be rubber stamp sessions, I guess. Again, no one has been more unfit for a position. But her family gave, I think, $200 million. So why wouldn't you get what you want? Let's go to Susan in Manchester. Good morning, Susan.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to say the reason why I supported her is, as a parent, I like the idea of vouchers. And I think every parent should have a choice of where they can send their children. I sent my children to parochial schools, but that was my choice. And so I think it's up to the parents. I think it's the parents' really concern. And as far as who we had in the past, our education, we're not very good as a complete country. According to the polls I saw on the status, our kids are not learning very much.
What states are the lowest ranking there?
I don't know them offhand. I just saw that, on the whole, United States is not doing very well.
Yeah. You know what brings down our average? It's red states, just for the record.
Well, anyways, why don't we all just give her a chance? Maybe she will.
Because I'm tired of this idea of just give someone a chance. Because would you hire someone to do a job that isn't qualified and say, hey, I'm going to give them a chance?
Who's to say she's not qualified?
Literally everyone involved, except for those who are licking her boots because she gave money.
Not necessarily. I like her because she's supporting vouchers.
How do vouchers work?
I don't really know because we never had them. Nobody would even consider them with a Democrat. So it gives parents an opportunity, especially in low-income areas.
Okay, so, two things. Do you still have children in school?
No, I don't.
Okay, so it doesn't affect you. And no, you don't even know how they work. You don't even know how they work. So you have no kids in school, and you don't know how vouchers work. So explain to me how you know what you're talking about.
You don't have to be rude.
Well, I asked you a question, and you're coming saying you support it, and I'm asking you that your support has no basis in reality.
But you're still rude.
Well, that's life. Are you going to be a snowflake like the liberals? Are you a liberal snowflake?
Why don't you grow up?
All right. Yes, thank you, Susan.
No, listen, you don't give anybody a chance to talk.
No, Susan, I gave you plenty of time. You have been on for 2 minutes now. What I want you to do is justify your comments.
Up for a minute, and maybe I will.
Okay, so Susan, my question to you is, how do vouchers work?
For the first time, and you didn't give me a chance to explain. My neighbors have kids in school, and they understand it, and they even said to me, I didn't ask them to pick their brain about why they wanted her, but they were all supportive about the vulture.
So we're just going to take it on your neighbors. Your neighbors should speak for everyone.
No, we'll take it on your opinion, though, right?
At least I take the time to educate myself and get the facts. You're just spouting off about what a neighbor said.
My neighbors.
Your neighbors are so brilliant.
Oh, you are such an ass.
Okay. 888-574-2723. Just ask a simple question. How do they work? How do vouchers work? You know? Call up and explain it. We'll be right back here on Ed Says. Welcome back to Ed Says here on the Talk of Connecticut. We are talking about confirmation hearings, DeVos, and basically saying things just to say them. Let's go to Joe in Newington. Good morning, Joe.
Hey, speaking of confirmations, I see a lot of Democrats were going up against Sessions. They don't want to see him in there. But
yeah,
there's a reason why, though. There's a reason why.
Yeah, because he's got a history of suppressing black voters.
Yeah, there's a reason why. One of the reasons is there's arrest warrants he's got ready for 30 politicians and quite a few others. And some of them are very prominent names on this East Coast. And if he gets in there, watch the fireworks. It may happen.
All right. Thanks for the call. Back to DeVos and my previous caller. And again, I use the analogy of hiring someone. When you have a team of 10 and you're the big boss and you've all interviewed someone and 8 out of 10 say yes and 2 say no, and then 5 out of 10 say yes and the other 5 say no, statistically, who are you probably going to go with? And then you just look at just sheer answers and qualifications. If you can't answer proficiency versus growth as a debate, you are missing out on education. It's simply how it is. Like, I can't explain it any more than that. It's an age-old discussion, and it makes someone not capable and not fit for the job. Let's go to Robert in Torrington. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning, Ed. Yeah, not this caller that you just had, but the other lady that was on. I tell you, as a Catholic school attendee, and my sons went to a private Catholic school, that was an embarrassment, what she said. I'll tell you quickly, everybody likes vouchers and handouts. Now, I chose to send my kids, as well as my parents sent me and my sisters, to the private school so that we could get the education for our religion and our faith and all that. But we didn't take any vouchers. We got financial aid through the Archbishop, you know, the way it should be. But the government didn't have any role in trying to adjust their curriculum. Now, as soon as these people that want these Catholic schools or whatever public private schools to survive, if they want all these vouchers, they got to understand that once you start taking money from the government, they're going to start telling the schools how to teach, what to do. Then they're going to say, oh, these schools are ruined. So, you know, you can't have it both ways.
Well, the idea here, some of the rumors floated around are that the Department of Education isn't long for this world. Maybe that's specifically why DeVos was put there, and the government wouldn't get involved anymore. And the danger there is that what you're being taught here in Connecticut, should your family say move for work, and go to, who knows, Alabama, Texas, California, you could be taught something completely different.
Well, you're right, and I agree. They got to have standards because you shouldn't be keeping people on a lower level. But my thing is, most of the people that attend these private schools, they have an attitude like, you know, with homeschooling or other stuff, that they don't want to teach this science subject because it's offensive or the other thing, or evolution or whatever. I mean, they would think the world is still flat. You know what I'm saying? So I don't disagree with those standards, but you can't, you know, have it one way and then try to do it, you know, to have it the other way by saying, oh, we want vouchers. Well, listen, the schools get a lot of money with tuition, and if the way the religion is going in this country now, and I can tell you the attendance in the schools is low because they do charge too much, but that's not the fault of the taxpayers, because that should be taken care of by all the people that belong, and the archbishop and whoever is in charge of doling out the money to support the schools.
I thank you for the call. Let's go to Mike in West Hartford. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, good morning. I'm just pulling this out of my hat, because I never really, I had a mental outline of what a voucher is, so I'm just going to throw it out there, because it's kind of like common sense. If I want a voucher to send my student someplace other than a public school, what the voucher would be some sort of a tax credit, which would be considered part of what my property taxes are, or what have you, that would normally go towards public education, so that I would get a tax credit, and that money would be used for me to help pay the tuition or whatever, because I'm not using the dollar figure per seat in a public school. They have it figured out from state to state. Since I'm not using that, then what would sound like being fair is that I would get a tax credit because I'm not using those services, and I would use that tax credit for...
So using that argument, couldn't people who don't have children say that they should get a tax credit because they're not using it either?
Well, no, and here's why. Those people that don't have children still need the services of what an educated society provides. Now, but here goes.
I mean, who's to say that?
Pardon me?
Who are you to say that?
I'm just saying. If I don't have kids in school,
maybe you can't selectively pay for services. That's the deal here.
When you go to the grocery store, you need somebody that has had some sort of a basic education to be able to service you.
Are you saying that you couldn't teach someone who hadn't been through primary school how to work at a grocery store? I think you could get that done in less than a week.
Yeah, but let's go down the road for every other kind of service. I'm just throwing that out there as one.
Right, but what I'm saying is that argument doesn't hold water. You can't say that just because you don't want your kid to attend that school that you get to take your money back. If I don't want my police department to enforce certain laws, I don't get to take that money back.
First of all, Ed, I didn't say that I advocated.
Okay, I know. I'm not arguing with you. I'm arguing the point. A lot of times people take this too seriously.
No, you're filibustering.
I'm not. I'm giving you legitimate arguments against
that lady. I was trying to help out that lady that you were bullying because.
Stop with the bullying. We're adults here. If you can't have a conversation and if you can't back up your position, that's not bullying. You're just
every
weak.
Every time, I'll tell you what. I am backing up my. You talk to anybody who in the education system who supports public education, which I feel like we all have to do, by having an educated population allows us to interact with each other.
But here you're getting off track. I'm not arguing the need for an educated society.
Yes, we are.
I'm arguing the idea that you get to pick where your money goes, and I'm saying that if somebody doesn't have kids and they're not using that money, that they shouldn't have to do it.
Well, you know, actually, what like you say about people that don't have children, then they should have choice. Your particular branch of ideology, you always talk about choice. So this is America. We should have choice. I mean, we're going down.
Without children are going to get tax credits because they're not going to school.
I didn't necessarily say that, but it's why shouldn't they? Why should they have to pay for kids in public school if they don't? I'm just being devil's advocate right now.
Well, that's what I was doing. You can't take my position. You were just arguing against it.
I wasn't arguing against it.
You were just saying we needed an educated population.
I said I was playing devil's advocate. We do need an educated population.
All right, Mike, we're talking in circles.
Hey,
I thank you for
the
call.
Way,
I appreciate the call. You can drop. No getting a last word in. We're talking in circles. You just picked up my argument when it comes to I was being devil's advocate in saying that people without kids shouldn't have to pay. I don't think that's the case because as a taxpayer, you pay for services whether you use them or not. If you want to get a private police force, you can. If you want to get a private education, you can. All right? But if you want to get an education that your tax dollars pay for, that exists. If you could never call the fire department in the entirety of your life, and yet you still pay for it. That's a smart thing. And just because you don't have kids doesn't mean you shouldn't pay for education. And just because you have kids doesn't mean you should get a tax credit back for where you want to send your kids. It is damaging. And every educator that I've talked to about this says DeVos is a bad idea. Says DeVos is bad for education. And that's what this is about. This isn't about vouchers, and this isn't about how things are. This is about, this conversation that we're having is about how DeVos was a bad candidate, pushed through bipartisan politics, and the fact that Marco Rubio took almost $100,000 from her family in contributions. This is about her father-in-law is the founder of Amway, which is an ages-old Ponzi scheme. Her brother, Eric Prince, is the founder of Blackwater, which has changed its name a million times. This is about the idea. Oh, by the way, it's called Academia now, or Academi, in which they were in a conversation, and Blackwater manager Daniel Carroll met with Special Agent Gene Richter and contractor Donald Thomas Jr., and Thomas was talking about a story, and Carroll replied, "This is the guy from formerly Blackwater. I could shoot you and kill you here in Iraq, and no one would do anything about it, because that's the way it is here." Just making a threat right there. Not to mention, essentially, her family makes their money off pyramid schemes and war, and they buy influence by making these contributions. Again, McCain on the list for, I think, $50,000, Rubio, $100,000. And from a book back in 1997, she said, to those who say that she bought all of this, "I have decided, however, to stop taking offense at the suggestion that we are buying influence," she told the New Yorker. "Now I simply concede the point. They are right. We expect a return on our investment." She wasn't talking about this recently. She was talking about how our family puts all that money in. And this is why Citizens United is a bad idea. This is why people should have a limit on how much they can personally give, and businesses and corporations should not be allowed to make contributions at all. You basically gave a billionaire this job when she answered, "I don't know," to the entirety of her interview, especially the important questions. She doesn't understand the job or the scope of it. She doesn't understand the loan part of it, the banking part of it. She doesn't understand any of it. And yet, here we sit. 888-574-2723. Up next, we're going to talk to Fox News legal analyst Loretta Powers with today's top legal stories. That's next here on Ed Says. In just a moment, we will be joined by Fox News legal analyst Loretta Powers with the top legal stories of the day. On the list, we'll be talking about the travel ban, a Michigan whistleblowing case, and a transgender teen case in Virginia. We'll detail all of that. Just a quick point on the DeVos thing. We talked about charter schools. She is a fan of school choice, and in Detroit, that was her mission. In that city, choice came largely at the expense of public schools, and as students joined new charters, public school enrollment fell, and along with that goes funding, and competition pushed these schools into insolvency, and it showed that it didn't really change anything. 2014 showed 17% of Detroit charter school students were rated proficient in math, which was just a 4% raise from the 13% of public school students. And then last year, 1% of the city's schools got an A or B plus from the Excellent Schools Detroit, which is a reform group. Nearly 70% earned a D plus or lower, and 40% of those came from charters. Seven Detroit students sued the state of Michigan for failing to provide them basic access to literacy, and two of them were from charter schools. The idea that this will work is doubtful. And again, if you want to, you can. The opportunity is there. But this isn't about vouchers. This is about DeVos being a candidate who is unqualified for the job, roundly. It'd be like me walking into my boss's office and saying, you know what? I want to be your sales manager. My experience in sales amounts to an internship back in the early 2000s for maybe 8 weeks, in which I just filed papers. My personal skills when it comes to sales are minimal. If I walked into a business and said, hey, you want to buy some ads? And they're like, nope. I'd say, okay, call me if you do. And that's not how sales really works. And I'm going for the management job. Now I have management experience and I know what sales is. Does that qualify me for the job? I believe most of you would say no. But in this case, we have someone who doesn't know the basics. And here we are. The whole thing is bizarre. And there are some of you who are cheering because you're sticking it to the libs. Liberal tears. Your side won. Except real life doesn't work like that. It's not black and white. It's far more complex. And it will end up affecting you, whether you like it or not. With all these decisions being made, you wanted a change in government, and we're not getting it. You're getting your side getting what they want, which is not a change. There is supposed to be debate. There's supposed to be discussion. There's supposed to be compromise. And we are not finding it. And it is entirely frustrating, especially when I see people cheering it on. When people are like, yeah, this is the best. Is it? This isn't the way it's supposed to be. We have three branches of government. We have two parties at this point. Probably should have more. Joining us now, Fox News legal analyst Loretta Powers with today's top legal stories. Good morning, Loretta. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me on.
So let's talk about the travel ban. They had a conference call last night. The judges that was contentious, I think. The judges were really hitting back against the lawyers. Can you fill me in on what happened?
Yeah, so the attorney for the Justice Department argued national security, and the Solicitor General for the state of Washington argued that the ban was discriminatory and that it would cause irreparable harm to the state of Washington and Minnesota. Justice Freeland, you know, she seemed genuinely interested in the merits of the case, but this just raises the question, will Trump's anti-Muslim comments that he made on the campaign trail bite him in the butt? Because even if the statute is facially neutral, if there's a discriminatory intent, then that alone is unconstitutional because it violates the Establishment Clause.
So what you're saying is while his executive order might have been within his rights and might have been written properly, it is perhaps the intent behind it that they are looking at?
Yes. And, you know, the Ninth Circuit yesterday, they're not determining the constitutional issues, just whether the temporary restraining order issued by the Washington judge remains in force until these issues are decided. But eventually, we might see Donald Trump's tweets to the Supreme Court.
I mean, this year we've seen more tweets blown up onto foam core board than we ever have before. I can only imagine the Michaels in the area will be thrilled to know that people will need these tweets blown up.
Right, and maybe entered into evidence. I don't know.
They'll just put their logo in the bottom corner. When it comes to this court, these judges that are hearing it, there's a lot of people saying it's very liberal and that this arena was chosen for a specific reason. What happens? What are these judges deciding right now? It's just about the stay on the executive order. Then what happens?
Yeah, so the Ninth Circuit, as you said, it's like notoriously liberal, and it also gets reversed the most amount of times. And they kind of remind me of judges that I've met that have told their law clerks, hey, this is how I want to rule on the issue. Figure out the law so I could do so. And I really don't mean to sound callous, but it really doesn't matter what the Ninth Circuit does, because the losing side is going to appeal it. And it's just going to depend on the makeup of the Supreme Court at that time.
Oh, and that's the other thing. Right now, we've got a 4-4 split. So how's that going to go?
Well, if it's still a 4-4 split, then the lower court ruling will remain intact.
Oh, this is, I can't take this amount of drama. This is soap opera-ish. Like, we haven't had a breather since this time last year when it comes to all of the drama. And we know politics is dramatic, and I don't foresee this ending. You see what's going on with Sessions and these confirmation hearings, and then the wall. I'm sure if that starts happening, there will be lawsuits about that. And isn't Trump facing, like, 55 federal lawsuits right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's for sectional government at its best.
It's unbelievable. Let's go to Michigan, the Supreme Court there. A police officer says he was put on road patrol in a dangerous area because he made a criticism. What is going on there? Kind of walk me through this case.
Right, so a police officer, and he was also the president of the police officers union. He didn't like how taxpayers' dollars were being spent in the interest of public safety, so he spoke out about it. And the city of Flint, Michigan responded by reassigning him to worser hours and job duties. So he sued, claiming the whistleblower statute, which protects an employee against discrimination for reporting a violation of a rule. And so the issue here is, was this just an inconvenience? Was this officer just doing his job? I mean, it's his job to go into these situations. Or was it straight up discrimination because of what he said? And look, we don't want anyone punished for speaking out against injustices about how wasteful our tax dollars are being spent. So we're just going to have to see what happens.
If anything, it should be applauded, and it should point the finger at those who are defending it. But it seems that, and it's one of the things I criticized the Obama administration for, was the whistleblower laws underneath them, that there needs to be more protections for people who point out obvious wrongdoings. And it doesn't seem to be there anymore.
Right, and with the water crisis going on in Flint, Michigan, you know, that probably wouldn't have come to light but for a whistleblower.
It's absurd to me. And now in Virginia, there is a Supreme Court case about a transgender teen. What's going on there?
Yeah, so a young transgender man sued the school board that banned him from using the men's restroom because it isn't his biological sex. And the Fourth Circuit sided with this young man, citing the Obama administration's argument that the policy violates Title IX, which bars sex discrimination. So really the question is transgender discrimination the same as gender discrimination? The Fourth Circuit said yes. And you know what? They're going to hear this case on March 28th, and so Neil Gorsuch is not going to be confirmed by then. So it is very likely that this is going to come down to a 4-4 split, and as I said earlier, the lower court's ruling will be intact.
Wow, this is just more drama. I can't handle this drama, Loretta.
I'm sorry. I don't need to bring the drama. It's just the way the law is working right now.
Fox News legal analyst and drama bringer, Loretta Powers, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Eddie. Have a good day.
You too. Oh, man, it's so much going on with the courts. And that's saying that it will go along party lines. And maybe it won't. Maybe it won't go that way. Judges can go. They should be going by the letter of the law. So it'll be something to keep an eye on. 888-574-2723. Up next, we'll talk a bit about the ban and who it is really protecting. I'll bring you a firsthand account, a story delivered about what happens when you are stopped while traveling. That's next here on Ed Says on the Talk of Connecticut. Welcome back to Ed Says here on the Talk of Connecticut. That is the number. Thanks, Voice Guy, 888-574-2723. If there's something you want to talk about, you can also find me on Twitter at EdSaysCT, or the email is edsays@talkofconnecticut.com. We've talked about a multitude of things today. We looked at Senator Warren being silenced and the Streisand effect there. Donald Trump's threat to destroy someone's career, as he met with a sheriff who was talking about civil forfeiture. I am against civil forfeiture, for the record. The DeVos confirmation and the dangers there, not just in relation to America's educational system, but the idea that someone who is so incredibly unqualified getting confirmed and what it says when it is that close. And when you have people crossing party lines, if it's just going to be a partisan vote, the Republicans had it, but two Republicans crossed over to say, yeah, this is probably a bad idea. And then you have to look at the majority of those who didn't cross over, who probably received some money from DeVos or her family at some point in their careers, including Marco Rubio to the tune of almost $100,000. If you are one of those screaming drain the swamp, if you're worried about money in politics, no one exemplifies that more than DeVos and her extended family, be it her brother, her father-in-law, or anybody else surrounding her, because that is what they exist to do. Like the Koch brothers, like Soros, for those of you who like to scream his name and about how much he influences. Well, guess what? That's DeVos is the same, and it should trouble you. You can't condemn one without condemning both. You're not able to separate them. People who buy politicians are people who buy politicians. The ones on one side aren't any better than ones on the other. And Citizens United should be undone. The idea that corporations are people is silly. Corporations are no more people than your car is when you put people in it. Your car is your car. The people in it are the people. Your corporation is a business on paper. The people who make it up are people, and they each have an individual voice. And that is how it should work. There should be caps on campaign contributions completely, individual, totaling $500. That's it. That way, so even the wealthiest of person doesn't have an influence in that manner, which is not to say they won't have others, but we have laws for that until this administration gets rid of those laws. It is just absurd where we are these days. And when people are yelling and screaming about draining swamps and stopping corruption until it benefits them. I am not for corruption. It is not that hard. I say it to people of every walk of life. Just do your job. It's really not that difficult. Whether it's someone protesting a law because she was raised a different way and her job as a clerk is to give people who are gay who got married their marriage licenses. Well, that's your job. Don't like it? Don't take it. Go do something else. You have to measure what is worth more. If you want to be in politics and you can't do so without selling your soul, then get out. But as we see, people are awful and will often do what's only in their best interests or gets them ahead. And we reward it by reelecting these people. Somehow Mitch McConnell gets reelected, and that just blows my mind. Meanwhile, when we talk about the travel ban, which just came up when we were talking with Loretta, the experience, what happens when you are flying and stopped? Hina Shamsi was flying. She is director of the ACLU National Security Project. She was flying home from a work trip and faced questioning from Customs and Border Protection. Says it's unlike anything she's ever experienced in 25 years of travel in and out of the country. She says what they are doing now is so excessive, and what she experiences nothing compared to those who have been banned due to the executive order. She said a CBP officer took her to a separate area as she had been in Dominica for meeting and depositions in a lawsuit against two psychologists behind a CIA torture program. Questioning had nothing to do with the case was there. It had to do with her work for the ACLU and her citizenship with this Pakistani, although she's been a legal permanent resident for more than a decade of the United States of America. Explained that she was a lawyer, and the officer asked why someone working for an organization with American in the name would have a Pakistani passport. And you wonder why people need regulations and oversight. And why somebody would be working for an organization with American in its name to be representing people who are not citizens. It's this small-mindedness. It's this ignorance. It's simply what it is. It exists. She went on to say that she is a U.S.-trained lawyer who upholds the U.S. Constitution. And then the agent asked why she would travel abroad so much if she's focusing on the Constitution and working for that organization. She had to explain that she's gone to meetings, including with the United Nations, and kept asking questions and questions and questions that seemed to have nothing to do but with what she did. But it wasn't just travel. It was about schooling and other jobs, people she's represented. She says this didn't happen during the Bush years, and it didn't happen during the Obama years. So either this agent feels empowered to do this, or they are being told to question like this. Either one should trouble you. And the agent also asked, this is a government agent, by the way, why have you been a permanent resident without becoming a citizen? There's no requirement for that. And she explained that her naturalization ceremony was scheduled for the next day. He clearly had different thoughts as to what American means and what America means. Just because someone travels here, works here, and does things here doesn't mean they have to give up who they are or what they are. It's why we have these classifications. The idea that everybody wants to be American is absurd. Is America great? Yes, it is. Does it have its problems? Yes, it does. But this nationalistic take, this idea that we are perfect and infallible and everybody wants to be us, it's just hubris. There are plenty of other countries that people originate from that in their eyes are great for them. Doesn't mean they don't want to be here and work and help, but it also means they're not going to give it up. But apparently in our new America, love it or leave it, really applies.